Runsmith Enterprises presents episode 13 of Topics in Endurance Sports. I'm your host, Tim. Today is Saturday, January 13, 2018. You can find out more about me at my website at runsmith.net, such as email, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Also about my coaching services, and it is the middle of January, and I have a special if you sign up in January. So check it out on runsmith.net. You can find out what the special is. Basically, it's a two-for-one special. Or if you are signing up just yourself, you get an extra 2 months of coaching with any sign-up in January. Because I know a lot of people like to get things started at the beginning of the new year. This episode is brought to you by our new sponsor, Health IQ. Health IQ is an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like you, like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, get lower rates on their life insurance. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. Note what they say there. This is not some company offering pie-in-the-sky deals. They're not saying every single one of you is going to save 80%. That means they have some integrity. If you go over there, they will let you know, first of all, whether or not you will save money. And over half of you will, but some of you won't, and they will let you know. And if you do save money, it could be a modest amount, or it could be a pretty hefty amount of money. So these are athletic-minded people who know a lot about running, cycling. They've gathered all types of data, and I will give you more information about that later. If you want to learn more from them and get a free quote, go to healthiq.com/endurance. Remember to say endurance, because then if you sign up, I get a few dollars. So that's the way this works. So healthiq.com/endurance. Go check them out, please. We have one topic for today, the Tunnel Hill 100-mile race, which is in Illinois in early November. And for this one, I have a rather extensive interview with a couple of runners, Jess and Andrew. So I will try to make my portion of this race rather quick. I did run this race. A couple of things from last time, though. I forgot to mention in my last episode, which was about Run Woodstock, a series of races in Michigan in early September, that was in the last episode, I said that about 150 people ran the 100-mile and 100K races. We all took off at the same time. Actually, about 150 people were in the 100-mile alone and another 50 in the 100K. So just a little numerical mistake there. Also, I forgot to mention that there were rumors of a wild pig on the race course. I never saw this, but I either heard about it somewhere during the race or at the end of the race or later. There was this wild pig evidently running around. And my friend Dan, the guy I interviewed in the last episode, did see the pig. And not only that, but he got a picture of it. And if you want to see that picture, you can go to the runsmith.net website and look at Run Woodstock, and you will see a picture of the piggy. Anyway, I asked Dan about it, and he said he saw it within his last mile of finishing, and he had to stop and take the photo to prove it was not a hallucination. That's a bit of a joke, because the 100-mile race is called the Hallucination 100. The last runner I passed was just staring at it and said, "Good, you see it too," when I hiked past. So evidently, both of them were a little bit worried that they were hallucinating this pig on the course, but it was there, but I did not see it. Also, kudos, a shout out to my coaching client, Jana, who completed the Walt Disney World Marathon last weekend. And this was mostly impressive because she had a whole bunch of little niggles she was having to overcome, little knees and hips and feet and all these types of things which pop up. So I'm very proud of her for finishing that race. She lives down in Florida, so those of us who are freezing up in the Midwest right now or in other places probably are a little bit jealous she's down in the warmer areas of Florida. And I also know a lot of people would love to do the Walt Disney World Marathon. I would like to do it someday. Okay, let's get on to today's topic, which is the Tunnel Hill 100-mile race. This race, so again, I will kind of do my part relatively quickly as a way to introduce the race, and then we'll get into my interview with Justin Andrew, a real more extensive interview. But if I talk about some of the race first, then you'll have some idea of what we're talking about when I talk to her. So this race is in Vienna City Park in Vienna, Illinois. It looks like the word Vienna, like Vienna, Austria, but I discovered that people pronounce it Vienna. So I will try to say that. Vienna, Illinois. It was November 11th, 2017, almost exactly 2 months ago. I'm only 2 months behind now. I'm getting better, people. That is Veterans Day, by the way, the day this race was on. The night before, so it was about, I can't remember how many hours from us this is, 6 hours or something. We drove there during the day on Friday, November 10th, and we checked in. They picked this old school for check-in, and we checked in and got some goodies while we were there. For example, we got a hat. Oh, let me go grab the hat. Be right back. Okay, I have the hat on, and for those of you who wonder why I just did that, I do record this podcast as a YouTube video, and so you can watch this as a YouTube video or let someone else know who doesn't do podcasts that it will eventually be put up as a YouTube video. It usually takes me a few days, but I got a nice blue hat that says Tunnel Hill 100/50-mile runs on it. I like the hat. I love getting hats. Let's see, what else did we get there? Got a couple of bags that our stuff came in, like a black bag. I'll put that up to the screen. I'll put pictures of all this on the website, too, so you can you will see all of this stuff. I got another black bag. This one, what does this say? Tunnel Hill, 150-mile runs. Another blue bag with a different type of closure system at the top. Got a nice shirt. It's a black shirt. I love black, my favorite color. So the last two races I've done, I gave out all black stuff, which is my favorite. So this is a cotton long sleeve shirt, but it's got a hoodie on it. So it's nice. It says Tunnel. It's very simple, but I like it. Tunnel Hill, 150-mile run, Vienna, Illinois. It's got a little flag on it, I guess, for Veterans Day. What else did we get? Sorry, I'm bumping things around. Also got it. This is kind of odd. We got a bib belt. This is a belt that you wear around your waist, and it can hold your bib. If you don't know what this is, it may sound a little funny, but I'm very familiar with this because this is what I use in triathlons. So in triathlons, you don't want to pin anything to yourself because you're going to swim. And you usually don't even want it on the bike if possible because it flaps all over the place, your bib. But you do want to throw it on for the run, and you don't want to pin it on. So you use this little belt. Your bib is already on it, and you just snap the belt around your waist. So I've got a number of these, but I can always use another because they eventually do fall apart. So really kind of happy that they gave out those, even though I think many runners would not really use it. And, of course, I got a bib. You know, these nicer races, the bibs look more cool. Tunnel Hill 150 bib with a kind of a picture of the tunnel on it and my number 359. So those were the goodies. I may have forgotten something, but I think those were all the goodies. Happy with the goodies that we got. There was also a pasta dinner. I went down with my wife. We didn't go to that. I don't know. We're just kind of strange. We just went out and ate somewhere else. And also, the famous Tracy Falbo gave a talk at the pasta dinner. So I really should have went to listen to her, but we didn't go. But I heard she was very, very good. So, and I think every year he tries to, when I'm saying he, race director Steve Durbin, pretty famous race director at this point, because of some of his other races he does besides this one. Anyway, I think he always tries to get a good speaker. A few highlights about this race. This race is now 3 years old. It has a 50 and a 100. In 2016, last year, Corey Woltering ran a 5 hour, 30 minute 50 miler. 5:30:15. 50 miles. I think it was like the fastest 50 mile of 2016. If you don't know that guy, check him out. He is a really cool guy. C-O-R-E-E. Corey Woltering. In 2015, the year before, Mike Bialik, I don't know if I say that right, of Minnesota, ran the fastest 100 mile of 2015, 12:52:53. And in 2014, it was Tracy Falbo, who ran an American record for a woman on the trail, on a trail, 100 miler. She ran 14:45:26. So if you haven't figured it out, this is a fast, fast, fast course. And if you haven't heard already what happened this year in 2017, you're probably living under a rock, but that will come up eventually. So before I get into more details about the course and the race, I should mention my little pre-race story. So in my last episode, like I said, I talked about Run Woodstock and my 100-mile race I did there, Hallucination 100. That was on September 8th, almost exactly 3 months before Tunnel Hill. So I figured after doing that, I would be able to carry over that fitness for 3 more months, do Tunnel Hill, then give myself a break. If you listen to that episode, I talked about how I messed up both of my heels in that race, the heels of my feet. Kind of have to listen to what happened. It was a very strange injury that I got to both heels. The thing is, it took me weeks to get back to running to normal. So that was early September. By mid-October, I still wasn't running all that well. Actually, did I say 3 months? That's only 2 months. 2 months before Tunnel. It's only 2 month difference. So by mid-October, I was still having trouble running. Now we're down to just a few weeks before Tunnel Hill. Besides my heels, and I think because I'm trying to run and not hurt the heels, I started hurting other things. My knee was hurting. My hip was hurting. Everything was kind of falling apart. I think I tried one 10-mile race down in, I'm sorry, run, just a run. I remember going down to Cincinnati to a park and trying a 10-mile run, and I walked a bunch of it. It just was hurting. And I looked back at my logbook on October 21st, and in big letters it says, left hip bad, need a run break. So I wrote in gigantic letters. So I guess that day, that was the thing that was hurting me the most. Also on that day, I emailed the race director, Steve Durbin, and I dropped out of Tunnel Hill. I said, I'm done. I'm not going to be able to get back, and I just need a big break. So I dropped out. I then went 14 days without running, 14 full days without running. And after 14 days, on day 15, I did a little 6-mile easy run. I just went out to run. It ended up being 6 miles, and everything felt great. This was Sunday, November 5th. Everything felt great. So it's just 6 days before Tunnel Hill. So I emailed Steve Durbin back, and I said, please, 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 please let me back in. And he was like, yeah, it's cool. You're back in. It's not a big logistical issue for him to do it, but still very, very nice of him to do it. So now we have 6 days until the race. I've done one 6-mile run in 2 weeks. During that week, I only did one more run on Tuesday of 4 miles. So that means in the 21 days before Tunnel Hill, I ran a total of 10 miles, both of them the week of the race, and that was it. So my theory on this was that Tunnel Hill was so easy, so flat, that if I really had to, I could just power hike the whole thing. That was my idea. Had this race been a hilly race or mountainous, or I thought it was going to be a bunch of mud or a really rocky and difficult, I would not have tried to do it. But given that it was going to be flat on crushed gravel, I said, let's give it a shot. At least I knew I was very rested. So there's the background going into the race. Not any more injured, fresh, but not trained anymore either. Just trying to, hoping that my condition from the summer was going to carry me over. So That evening, my wife and I stayed in a hotel in Paducah, Kentucky, which is not far from Vienna. It's about 30 miles away or 30 minutes away. That's where we stayed the night before. Race morning, Saturday, November 11th. The race started at 7 a.m. So we got there about 6, probably a little before 6. No problem with parking. We were probably 50 yards away from the start. I'm not sure how much issue there ever was with parking, if other people had more issues, but we were close to the start. So if you get there an hour or so ahead, you're probably going to be okay. The temperature was in the high 20s, so it felt cold, but I thought it was kind of great. You know, I knew it was going to get up to, I think, the low 50s or something that day. I'd rather have high 20s than, you know, high 60s at that time in the morning. So it just meant I needed a jacket, and I think I had some gloves and needed to be feel warm, but I knew I could just drop it off at a drop bag down the road, so it wouldn't be a big problem. The course itself. Okay, here's a way to think about the course. The whole thing is crushed gravel. I mean, the only time you're not on crushed gravel is like crossing a road, or there's a little spot that's paved, maybe like right before the first turnaround, maybe for like a mile, it's paved. And then you turn around and come back that mile. So a couple of miles, and that's about it. Out of the whole 50 miles that make the course, you got a couple of miles that's paved, a bike path. All the rest is crushed gravel, very flat. It's USAT certified. That's very interesting. So it's a certified 100-mile course, which is why you see people coming and doing these records, because it's automatically certified. You begin by running south, roughly south. So you start in the middle of the course, and the course itself is going to cover 50 miles. So you run south roughly 12 and a half miles and then back north 12 and a half miles. So you've run about 25 miles and you're back at the start. Then you go north and you run about 12 and a half miles and come back about 12 and a half miles and you're back at the start again. At this point, you've covered the whole course. You've done 50 miles. So very roughly, that's about how it is. Actually, it's about when you go south, it's more like a little over 13 miles and then back. And then when you go north, it's more like 11.75 miles. So it's not quite 12 and a half, but you can think of it that way. Pretty close. Another way to look at this course is, again, you start in the middle and you run south about 5 miles to an aid station. So you have aid stations about every 5 miles. Run 5 miles south to an aid station, then another 5 to another aid station, and that's where you can have a drop bag right there. You'll run about another 3 miles, turn around, come back to that aid station with the drop bag, run another 5 miles back to that first aid station, run another 5 miles, you're back at the start finish. Then you're going to go north, and it's pretty similar. You run about 5 miles to an aid station, another 5 miles, during which you go through the tunnel that makes Tunnel Hill. Right after you go through the tunnel, there's another aid station, which I believe people call the depot. You'll hear someone calling it the depot later. I didn't know it was a depot. I didn't pay attention. And you can have a drop bag there. So it kind of correlates with that drop bag on the southern half. Now you have this same drop bag area on the northern half. Again, after you go through that, you run about a couple of miles to the turnaround, come back to that aid station right at the tunnel with the drop bag, go through the tunnel, run another 5 miles to that first aid station on the north side, run another 5 miles to the start finish. So I hope all that makes sense. Logistically, this is really, really easy for a crew to get to and all that business, because you just drive up and down, you know, one road basically, and you can find these aid stations. So really kind of nice. The turnarounds themselves weren't really aid stations. I can't even remember if they had anything. They might have had a baby table with some liquids on it, but they weren't really aid stations at the turnaround. There was a timing mat there, and there'd be a person there. So you couldn't cheat by like not running all the way to that turnaround. There was a timing mat. But anyway, that's the course. Very simple logistically. Also, of course, you can have a drop bag at the start finish, and your car is there as well if you want to go there, if your car is nearby. Since it was Veterans Day, there was the Boy Scouts presented the colors. The VFW did a 21-gun salute. I can't remember if someone played taps or not, maybe, but they did do a Veterans Day celebration of sorts. The Vienna High School members sang the national anthem. I didn't really realize they were singing. I was kind of far away at the moment. Of course, I took my hat off and listened. Didn't know who was singing it. But anyway, that was it. And then we took off at 7 a.m. So everything was pretty easy at the beginning. No issues at the beginning of the race. And I'm going to tell you that my race was not super interesting in many ways. So it's good that I have an extensive interview with a couple of people, because mine just kind of went okay. I just did the race. But to go ahead and review a little bit, when you start the race, they do a little loop around the parking lot to begin. And that's just to spread everybody out. Because the trail itself is usually about 10 feet wide. Not really a problem, but there's a lot of people who do this race. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the numbers. But there's like hundreds, maybe 1,000, some huge number, do this race. A lot of people. So even with a 10-foot wide trail, you kind of want to get everyone spread out. So we did a little loop around the parking lot, maybe about 0.4 miles, roughly. And then we went across the street and got on the trail to go south. And like I said, it was chilly. And I think at that first aid station, not the first aid station with a drop bag, which would be the second aid station, I dropped my gloves and a jacket off. And because it was just warm, now I was getting in the 30s and I was feeling good, probably high 30s by then. So I did okay. I just jogged all the way to the turnaround at about mile 13.5-ish. Came back to that aid station. At that point, you're about 16 miles, the aid station with the drop bag. And at mile 16, that's about as far as I could go without walking. So that's how out of shape I was. I could run 16 miles, and that was it. I wasn't really super bummed, because my feeling again was I was just going to run, walk this whole thing anyway. But having said that, that's not good. I mean, I probably should go back to this race in true shape sometime. And I don't think I'd ever run 100 miles. I don't think I'm ever capable of that, but I should be able to go more than 16. I should be able to run the first, 40 miles or something like that before I'm resorting to walk, run type things, or just run, walk the whole thing, but a more aggressive run, walk maybe. But anyway, at that point, about mile 16, I'm heading back to the start finish, and I started a run walk, which I just made up right on the spot, where I did about a 0.3-mile run and a 0.2-mile walk. So I just looked at my watch, and every 0.3-mile, I'd go 0.3-mile run, 0.2-mile walk. And this was about 3.5 minutes of both, something like that. So really, time-wise, it was kind of like 3 to 4 minutes run, 3 to 4 minutes walk, 3 to 4 minutes run, 3 to 4 minutes walk. And this came kind of naturally. I think I took a few miles to work this out. And that's really a pretty good little run-walk system for me. 3 to 4 minutes is nice. It's short enough that it doesn't feel like you're really waiting for that walk to come. If you do like 8 minutes or 18 or something like that, you're really waiting for that run because you're like, oh man, but 3 to 4 minutes, anyone can do that pretty much. And then you walk 3 to 4 minutes, and that's long enough that you're starting to itch. You're starting to say, I need to start running again. So at least for me personally, that might be something I'll do more often, is about 3 to 4 minute run, 3 to 4 minute walk. Anyway, I kept this up all the way through to back to the start finish, which is about mile 26. And I saw my wife, Deb, there. Said hi to her, and nothing really amazing I had to do there. I probably just grabbed a few more gels and stuff like that, a little food, and just continued on. Now I'm on the northern segment of the race. And for the first 4 miles of the northern segment, it's completely flat. And then it actually goes uphill. Now the hill is a joke of a hill. It's about 2% of it's really a grade. I wouldn't even call it a hill. It's a grade. And honestly, if you're feeling good, you wouldn't even notice it. I don't think you would notice you're going uphill. If you were like flying along and feeling good, you'd still think you were going perfectly flat. It's the type of thing where you're feeling really, really bad, then you say, oh, I guess I'm going uphill. You can't even really see that you're going uphill. You can kind of feel it. But I didn't really feel it this first time. I just continued on with my 0.3 mile run, 0.2 mile walk. I was able to do this for a long time. So the hill itself goes up for about 5 miles or something like that. And it ends around mile 36, or 10 miles up this. And that's right about the tunnel. So the tunnel kind of ends the hill. You walk through the tunnel, right on the other side of the tunnel, about another 100 yards, is the aid station. The tunnel itself is 800 feet long, and it's just a big concrete tunnel. Of course, this used to be a train track, which is where this whole trail came from. It's a train track. And the thing is, it's pitch black in the middle of this tunnel. So you really need a headlamp, but no one's got a headlamp during the day. So, and your eyes don't quite adjust quick enough. So it's a little bit funny because you can't see your feet. You can't really see the outlines of the walls. You can see the far end of the tunnel, the light at the end of the tunnel you can see. But you're running a little goofy for a bit. You're worried about running into the wall. You can't see your feet, and the ground's not 100% smooth. It's like concrete, but a little bit chewed up. So you keep worrying you're going to step into a hole or something that you can't see. So your running becomes a little funny right there. I just kind of imagine running at night with no light. You feel a little bit concerned that something's going to happen, but it's smooth enough and not a problem. It's only for a couple of minutes that you're kind of in that state where you're really blind, and then you get towards the other end and you start able to see again. But it's kind of neat to go through the tunnel. At that aid station, which again is called the Depot Aid Station, I guess. Again, it's about mile 10 in the northern section. That's where you have a drop bag. And I saw my wife there again, Deb, and said hi to Deb, and continued on. After that, you go downhill after that aid station. It goes downhill a little bit. So at that tunnel itself, it's kind of the high point. You go through that, go about 100 yards to the aid station, then you actually go downhill to the turnaround. Again, doesn't feel like much until you're tired, and then it feels quite a bit when you turn around and come back up it. So you come back up it to the aid station again. Again, I saw my wife there. Said hi to her. That's where you can have a drop bag. And said goodbye to her. Ran 100 yards, you're back at the tunnel, you go through the tunnel, then you got 10 miles back to the start-finish again. And I'm still doing my 0.3 mile run, 0.2 mile walk. I'm still doing that this whole way. Go the other 10 miles, and I get back to the start-finish. And now I have done about 50 miles at this point. My watch said, I think, around 11 hours and 48 minutes, roughly. And it's very dark at this point because it's November, so it got dark around hour 8 or something. So quite a while I was already in the dark. I think I had my light at the I have a little note to myself where I had a light. No, I picked up my light actually at the start finish the first time I went through. I picked up a light, which was way earlier than I needed it. But I'm that way with my lights. I like to be prepared. I could have easily left it at the drop bag, at the Tunnel Hill drop bag, if I wanted to. But I already picked it up at the start-finish at mile 26. So I had it in the middle of the afternoon. I had my light. But definitely by the time I got back to the tunnel aid station, I was starting to need to turn it on. So I probably had it on for a few hours before I got back to the start-finish. And now I've done 50 miles. And I wasn't sure Deb was going to still be there, but she was, which is very nice. And at that point, I said, okay, time for you to go home, because I'm going to go to the hotel, because I was going to continue on. But she decided to wait because Camille Herron was not that far from finishing. And what I mean by finishing is finishing the whole race. She was just behind me. So she almost did the whole race, the whole 100 miles, in the time I did 50 miles. So a little bit more about that later. But Deb did wait. She only had to wait about another 45 minutes. I took about 10 minutes or so at the start-finish to get everything I needed. I knew it was going to be getting colder, so I probably grabbed a little more gear to wear. And so it's going to be another... Deb wasn't sure how much farther it was going to be till Camille Herron showed up, but it ended up only being about another 45 minutes before she arrived. to finish the 100-mile race in a world record, if you haven't heard that. So it was pretty amazing. One little aside here. For those of you who use Garmin Connect, if you have a Garmin watch, you can online, there are little programs called Garmin Connect, and that's where you upload your data, and you can see a map and everything of what you've done. I don't understand why there is no plot that shows distance and time at the same time. So in other words, I didn't set my split. I didn't hit the split when I got to back to the start finish and did my first 50 miles. And so there's no way to look at Garmin Connect and see that, oh, when I got back to the start finish, this was my time. You can estimate it. You can look and kind of eyeball it. But I don't understand why on one plot they don't have distance and time on the same plot. It'd be very, very easy to do because they have all these other parameters. Like you can look at distance versus cadence. You can know your cadence at any time along the race, or you can know your heart rate at any point. Oh, at mile 50.4, I had a heart rate of such and such. But you don't know at mile 50.4 how much time you had been running. That is the craziest thing to me I've ever seen. I don't know why Garmin Connect does that, why they can't fix that, because to me, that's the number one thing I would probably use it for, or often the number one thing I would use it for in a race like this would be, oh, I got to this aid station. How long did it take me to get to that aid station? How long did it take me to do the first half? Well, you can eyeball it, but you don't know for sure. I think that's really strange feature, a bug of Garmin Connect. I can't believe no one else there thinks that that would be a useful thing to have. But anyway, they didn't. So like I said, I finished that first 50 miles about 11:48, although my watch said 50.7. My watch would end up reading 101.5, and the official distance is really 100.1. So my watch would end up reading about 1.4 miles too long. I don't know why, but it did. Yeah, I do, of course, at aid stations walk around a little bit, but not 1.4 miles worth. So kind of strange. That's where my watch is. It's not that perfect. So anyway, Deb went back to the hotel so she could sleep because that's the way we do things. I talked about that in the last episode, and I would see her in the morning. So I took off to repeat everything I had just done. And there's really not a whole lot to say about it. I continue on in the dark to the south, to the turnaround. I'm at mile like 63 at this point. And at this point, I really thought I was going to walk the final 37 miles. I had pretty much nothing left in my legs, just a lot of foot pain. That's one thing I get is a lot of foot pain. Hips were bothering me, you know, the hip flexors. Everything was kind of just hurting. It wasn't so much of a bonk again. I had energy okay, but it was painful to run. This is the way things usually work for me. So I just started walking at that point. So from about mile 62, I started walking. This was kind of interesting because at this point, I almost see no one. I mean, I do at the aid stations, but if I'm not at an aid station, I see almost no one. And in my interview, Andrew makes a good point about this because at that point, first of all the 50-mile people are gone. They're done with their race. And at that point, where I'm at, pretty much everyone is going my same direction. They're either behind me, following me, or they're in front of me, you know, going that same direction on the north side of the course. There's not a whole lot of people going to be coming back at me because if they are, they're pushing cutoffs. So they're going to be having a real problem finishing the race. So I was far enough at the back that at this point, anyone left is pretty much all in the same direction for the most part. A lot of people are coming at me, but they're going to stop and finish the race at the start finish. So it was really isolated at this point. I remember I walked for probably a good 10 miles. I remember one time I came across a couple and I walked with them for, you know, maybe a half a mile or something. I remember telling them that, you know, when I get to back to the start finish around mile 75-ish or so, I don't want to stop because I'm afraid if I stop there, I'm just going to really stop. I don't want to sit down or anything. So I was talking to them about, I'm just going to get what I need and keep going. So that's what I did. I got there about mile 75. It's the middle of the night at this point, you know, whatever it is, 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning or something. And this was kind of interesting. I get there And the aid station is dead. I thought that was really bizarre. Nothing at the aid station. There was like a couple of cups sitting there with water in them. Absolutely nothing. I was like, really? I'm not that far in the back. All right. This race is not going to be open for like another 8 hours or something. Something like that. I mean, a long way to go before this race is over. What the heck, you know? Luckily, I had what I needed in my drop bag. So I remember I was sitting on like someone else's big drop box. Kind of rude of me, but I was tired. So I'm sitting on their drop box, fiddling with my drop bag. And of course, when I stop, I start getting really, really cold. It wasn't that cold. It's probably in the 30s, but you stop and then you just start shivering. That's what I do. So I remember I just got whatever food I wanted. I remember I grabbed a rain jacket. I have this very, very, very light rain jacket. I grabbed that and threw it in my pack that I had. Well, later I'm reading a blog about the race, and someone writes that by this point, quote, all of the food had been moved into a warming tent. Now, even now, I have no idea where this warming tent was. I cannot even picture where it would have been. I never heard of a warming tent. No one told me there was a warming tent. Not that I'm saying it was anyone's fault but my own. I'm just saying no one said, hey, there's a warming tent over there. I can't picture even where it could be. I know there was the parking lot, the start finish. I guess it was somewhere on the other side there, but I don't recall seeing a tent. I still don't know anything about a warming tent. When I was done with the race, there was nothing, which is going to be one reason I just left the race, because I didn't see any place to go inside. And I guess there was this warming tent. I never saw it. No clue. I'm probably the only person out of 1,000 who doesn't know anything about this warming tent, who did not figure this out. But that's me. I'm so, I don't know. My mind doesn't really work properly at times. So it was probably right in front of me, and people were probably going in and out of it, and I just didn't notice. I saw porta potties. I went into the porta potties, and that was it. So I was only at that start finish in the middle of the night for, 15 minutes or whatever it took me. Just only because I was moving really slow. I would have been there 3 minutes if I could have moved faster, but I sat down and I had to take my gloves off and go through my stuff and grab this and that. Maybe it was only 5 minutes. I don't know. It wasn't very long. So anyway, I continued on somewhere around this point, maybe just before or just after. I did start running again, if you can call this running. I settled into a 0.4-mile walk and a 0.1-mile run. I know that sounds really pathetic, but actually I think it helped. 0.4-mile walk, 0.1-mile run. The 0.1-mile run, obviously, I'm not doing much running, but I did a couple of things. For one, it kind of broke things up, which helps. So if any little pain the walking was causing is a little bit different pain the running is causing. Plus, every time I ran, I'm going a little faster, of course, there, and that's at least, 40% of what I'm doing, right? 0.2 miles out of every point, out of every mile. So it's at least, it's 20% of everything I'm doing. So at least 20% of my distance I am running. But on top of that, I think every time I stopped running, I'd walk a little faster. That was the other thing. It urged me to walk fast, because if you do nothing but walk, your walking kind of gets slower and slower and slower. But because I kept running every 0.4 miles, I start running again. Then when I slowed down to walk, my walking was faster than it would have been. At least I'm pretty sure that was the case. It just kind of urged me to do a faster walk. So I think it actually helped. Doesn't seem like much running, but I think it probably was a matter of a couple minutes per mile faster. So I think it helped. So everything, not a whole lot eventful happened during that. Again, the last 50 miles or the last 24 miles, around 90 mile 95-ish, I started feeling a little mist, like it was going to rain. This is the only precipitation I ever felt at this point. And when we talked to Jess and Andrew in their interview, they're going to find out they said they got snowed on. I never got snow. And they said they got rained on at a time when I think was much earlier than this. I didn't get that rain either. But I started feeling a mist. I pulled my jacket out and put it on, but then it stopped almost right away. I kind of wish I had not put my jacket on, because it took effort to do, and I didn't have the energy to take it back off, so I just wore it into the end. I was almost starting to get a little warm, but it was okay. But that was it. That was the only precipitation ever I felt is right there. I believe at the end, the last 10 miles, I didn't always have cell service on this whole thing, but I think I was getting somewhere in the last 10 miles. I was texting my wife saying, I'm about, you know, where I'm at, 4 miles to go, 3 miles to go, whatever. With about 1 mile to go, she came out and saw me, which was really, really nice, because then I just said, heck with them, walking the whole last part with her. So it was kind of nice. I even slowed down to just a crawl because I knew I was going to make it. So, I mean, I was like even half the pace I was going before. I really slowed down. I'm like, yeah, what the heck. So I walked with her the last mile or two and finished the race 27 hours, 14 minutes, 31 seconds. 27, 14, 31. It was 10:14 a.m. Of all the people who finished, I was 132 out of 180 finishers. So I can, as you can see, towards the back. 98 of 120 men, quite towards the back. There were only 14 DNFs, but that's not true. This race allows you to drop during the race to the 50. So even though it looks like only 14 people did not finish the 100 miler, I think that means 14 people didn't get 50 miles in. A lot of people probably dropped, but then they got credit for a 50 mile. Which is totally fine with me. They make the rules, but it would, I guess a little part of me would like to know how many people started the 100 and then how many people dropped from 100 to 50, just for my own knowledge, I guess. Maybe it'd make me feel better if I knew that was a larger number, you know, so I can say, well, I was 98 out of 120 men, but, you know, so many more men actually started. Might make me feel a little bit better, but again, race director makes the rules, and who really cares, right? Nobody really cares. So at the end, we got some goodies at the end here. We got a beautiful buckle, which I'm showing up on the camera right now. Tunnel Hill, it's gold and silver. Got a picture of a couple of people running out of the tunnel. Very nice, this 100-mile run. And also a hoodie jacket, which I love because I love, love, love hooded jackets. I've been wearing this quite a bit already. It's black, which I love. On the back, it says Tunnel Hill, Vienna, Illinois. It says on the back, on the front, it says Tunnel Hill over the zipper. It says, if you zip it up, then it says Tunnel Hill, like so. And you zip it up. And it's got a little patch. It says 100 mile run. So again, I'll put pictures of all this stuff on the website and you can see it. But I love that hooded jacket. I wore it a lot. So I wear hooded jackets all the time. So it's very, 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 very nice. And let's see. When I finished, like I said, I was very tired. Everything was kind of hurting like it always is with me. And I was starting to get very cold when I finished a race. When I stop moving, I just start shivering pretty quick. So I got in the car. I said, let's go. I just want something to eat. Because again, I saw nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not a banana. Nothing I saw at the finish. So I said, let's go get something to eat. Let's go over to, there was a Casey's gas station. So I went over there, got a slice of pizza. And I was going to go back. You know, I thought, oh, let's go back. And I got my recorder. Maybe I'll interview someone. But I was kind of too tired to do that, like I said last time. And I just felt there was no place to go. Again, I guess there was this warming tent and people were there, but I did not see it. So I said, what the heck? So I was probably at the finish for like 5 minutes. That was it. I did talk to Steve Durbin for a little bit. Nice, nice guy. He even remembered who I was. And he said, yeah, see, you finished with plenty of time. What a great guy. So that was really kind of nice to talk to him. Again, he's a great race director. I definitely recommend some of his other races that some of you know about. The Barkley Fall Classic, the Ruts Run Under the Stars, there's Land Between the Lakes, there's this one. There are some other ones as well. Durbin Race Management. Go check it out. If you just look for Tunnel Hill 100, that's just one of the races. So definitely check out his races. Anything else? We're about to go into the interview here. So by now you have a good idea of the race itself. You know, kind of how it works. Again, Jess and Andrew, their story's a little more interesting than mine, but we'll get to their interview here. Before I interview, a reminder again that this episode is sponsored by Health IQ, who may be able to offer you exclusive rates on life insurance by correctly answering questions on their Health IQ quiz. So yeah, go take a little quiz they have, and that can help you save some money on life insurance. More savings may be realized by submitting race results and or Strava data, this type of data. Health IQ has done the research and have gathered all types of data about health-conscious athletes. For example, high-endurance athletes have a 27% lower level of mortality from cardiovascular disease and a 40% lower level of mortality from cancer than your average bloke. So there you go. They know all this stuff. So if you want to save on your life insurance, go to healthiq.com/endurance. healthiq.com/endurance. Get a free quote. And with that, let's get on to Justin Andrew and their little story right here. Oh, right here. By the way, I went down and interviewed them about a month after the race. I went down to Cincinnati and interviewed them about their race. And we'll start that right here. Okay, I'm here with a couple Tunnel Hill finishers. I'll have you say your names. You are?
Jess Overly.
Jess Overly, and you are?
Andrew Witterer.
Get a little closer, Andrew. All right, Andrew. What's the last name?
Andrew Witterer.
Witterer.
Yes.
It's a little bit of a tongue twister to say your last name.
Well, it's just Wetter plus ER.
Wetter ER. More Wetter.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Exactly.
And Jess, you are from just around the corner, right?
Yeah, we're on my block right now.
In the great city of Cincinnati.
Yep. And we're in Oakley right now.
Oakley, that's a little neighborhood. So I'm kind of new to Ohio, but I'm learning we have neighborhoods in Cincinnati.
Correct.
That people often refer to, which confused me, because then I realized later that, oh, it's actually Cincinnati.
Cincinnati has
because
52.
Because the map doesn't have these names.
No, but 52 neighborhoods in Cincinnati, and that's what comprises Cincinnati. And that's what makes running around Cincinnati so much fun, is each neighborhood kind of has its own little feel.
Right, right. Well, this is a very nice little spot. I ran up and down the street. I liked it. Very nice. Andrew, what neighborhood do you live in? Or do you live in Cincinnati?
I'm in Cincinnati. I'm actually just down the road in an area called Madisonville.
Madison.
Specifically Madison Place within inside Madisonville, which makes it even more confusing for out-of-towners.
It is very confusing. I agree. All right, so both of you did Tunnel Hill. First question, have you run Tunnel Hill before, Jess?
I've done the 50-miler the last 2 years.
The last 2 years.
Yes.
Okay. And were both of those successful?
Yes, I loved it, which is why about mile 40 in last year, Andrew was my entire crew. I said, hey, let's do the 100 next year. And he said, okay.
And Andrew, have you done Tunnel Hill before?
I have. So what Jess didn't mention was Tunnel Hill was her first 50 miler 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
So I ran that with her at that point. Last year, I actually came back and crewed her. And then, like she said, about mile 40, she said, I want to do the 100. I said, okay, I'll run a 100-miler with you. Why not? Sounds like fun.
At mile 40, you decided.
Yeah.
So that's not the time I would be thinking, because even 50 miles gets painful. So at that point, I'd be thinking, 50's enough. So that's good. All right, so let's get right to the race itself. So let's do it this way. Let's do kind of the first 50 miles. So we'll go back and forth. So the race, the course is, you go down about 13 miles, you come back, and then you go the other way about 12 miles and come back. All right, so Jess, for you, the first 50 miles, can you kind of give a description how everything went?
First 50 miles were great. Andrew and I, actually, we were together the whole first 50 miles, so our story is going to sound pretty similar. We had a plan ahead of time. We had done a lot of our long training runs together, and we spent a lot of time talking about what our first 50 miles were going to look like. And we really stuck to that plan with nutrition, with our the time that we spent at the aid stations. We had a plan. We had a time plan. We hit our 50-mile mark right within 15 minutes of what our goal was. So we really were very solid that first half. It was really cold in the beginning, which Andrew loves and I hate. 26 degrees is cold for me, so I kind of struggled to get warmed up, where that is actually more optimal for Andrew. But he and I, we've ran, We ran our first marathon together 6 years ago. We've ran quite a few marathons together since then. He ran my first 50 miler with me, so we've spent a lot of time running together. And so we kind of just know, just instinctively, where the other person is at all the times.
So that's like that thread I just saw on Facebook, he's your ultra, or your running spouse.
Maybe.
Your running husband.
I think that's true. I'm sorry, Sarah.
It's only running. That's all. It's nothing more than that. Okay, so everything, the body felt well. Mm-hmm. Legs felt good the whole way?
The whole time. I mean, we talked through everything. We're really good at talking through. We know each other's trouble points. So we would talk through, hey, how's your hip? How's your ankle? And, I mean, we were really solid the first 50 miles.
Were you running the whole way, or did you have a run-walk? Did you walk through aid stations? Or how much walking do you think you did?
We didn't do a lot of walking. I mean, we slowed it down at certain times, but I would say we pretty consistently ran the whole first 50 miles.
Yep.
And do you know what your time was at mile 50?
11-something.
Yeah, so I don't remember.
11-something. It was like 11:45-ish.
Okay, so just under 12 hours.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that means it's starting to get dark again, right?
No, it was dark.
No, it was dark because we're in November now.
Yeah, because it gets dark at 4:50.
Right. That's right. So it got dark around hour like 8 or something.
Yeah,
eight or 9, it's starting to get dark already.
And so we knew that ahead of time. So we knew that when we came through the depot the second time, that we were going to need all of our lights. Because we'd ran the 50 before, we knew really every aid station exactly what we needed. So I had a bin that was labeled the darkness, and it had all the stuff that we were going to need once it got dark. We had all of our headlamps, which we had some technical difficulties with, a lot of extra layers, because once it gets dark, it gets cold out there. And so we were prepared for that. And before we went through the tunnel the second time, we had all of the stuff that we needed for the darkness.
So at the start finish, you had your headlamp. So at mile 26-ish, you're already grabbing your headlamp.
Nope. Or did you? The depot, so like 42. Like
okay,
right before
I get
you go through the tunnel the second time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. So you're all planned. Okay, Andrew, have anything to add to the first 50 miles for you?
No, I would agree. We did run pretty much that whole first 50 miles, give or take. I think probably combined we may have walked 2 miles, if that. We were feeling pretty good. I know I had some knee aches here and there, but nothing that you would not expect for a 50 to 100-mile race. So
right.
Overall, first 50 miles, we're feeling pretty good at that point.
All right, so then after mile 50, you're heading back to do it again. Are you, Jess, are you kind of psychologically psyched about it, or is it kind of like, oh my goodness, I'm going to do this again?
Oh, I was excited because every mile was the first I had ran in a race before. So we had a crew that was a lot of fun. It was friends and family that were there, and they were Instagram storying all of it, which was very fun. So we would come in, they're like, hey, Jess Overly, this is the first time you've ever ran 55 miles in a race. How do you feel? It was very fun. My boyfriend, he had to work all day, but he drove all the way from Cincinnati out there, and he was there at mile 55. So that was exciting for me, and a lot of energy. But it had been cold for a while, and it was dark, and I started getting very, very cold. But the energy level was still very high at 55 and at 60.
And the turnaround is like 63-ish or 62.
Yes.
Is when you're going to turn around. Yep. Again, right?
Yeah.
And then you're going to come back. So, all right, so you're still feeling pretty good heading out for 50. You're not frightened. You're not scared to death
not
that
yet.
You're going to have to do this again. Andrew, this isn't your first 100, right?
No.
So you're used to that, but still, nevertheless, every race is different. So you're still feeling pretty happy setting out for the next 50?
Yep, for the most part, once we got into 50, got a little bit of soup. They have some good soups to kind of help warm back up, which is real important when the temperature starts dropping. So kind of go back out for the next 50 milers. Still feeling pretty good at that point, going into the first turnaround at, mm-hmm. what did we say, 62, 63.
Right.
Feeling pretty good still.
All right. Okay, so second 50 miles, Jess, how did that all go? Did things stay steady, or did you have a nice downhill slide into...
I would say it wasn't even a nice downhill
despair.
Slide. It just was, it was just a drop.
Uh-oh.
I'm not great with cold, but I do just want to echo what Andrew said, that the reason I chose this to be my first 100-mile race is that, well, I love the 50s, but it's just, Steve Durbin says, such a good job. It's so well managed in each of the aid stations. Every time you pull into aid station, you're just excited because it's kind of like a little party.
Yeah.
And you just love being there. But when we came back around that second time, so that would have been about mile 67, I didn't do as well. I was really, really cold. And there was a heater and a tent, and I was trying to get warm.
That's where I saw you guys, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yep, yeah. That's exactly right.
You guys were a little ahead of me, and I came, and I kind of came in, and I was afraid to sit down. You guys were sitting down. And I was afraid if I sat down, that'd be the end of my race. I was kind of like, how do these people have the guts to even sit? Because...
Oh, I wasn't going to sit down. Yeah. So I was hanging out.
Because Andrew was all bundled up in a blanket or something, weren't you?
Well, he did that because I passed out.
Oh, my.
So I actually passed out at 67.
No, wait. When you say passed out,
I mean,
explain
this.
Are you standing and then you wake up on the ground? Or
so
what?
I was standing and the next thing you know, I'm sitting in a chair.
They caught her before she made it to the ground, but yes.
But I don't remember that part. There was a heater. I was trying to stay warm. So you know, those heaters are on the ground. Yeah. So picture leaning over, trying to stay warm. When I stood back up, I got really lightheaded and... Next thing you know, I'm in a chair, there's blankets all around me, and there's people trying to talk me out of running the rest of this race.
Oh, my.
But I didn't want to be talked out of this race, so I chose every word.
Who was doing that?
There were two people that were managing that aid station.
Man, they need to be fired. I'm just joking.
No, they did a good job. And they interviewed me. They interviewed Andrew. They went and talked to him because we were running together. They talked to my crew.
Right.
And they finally agreed because I had such good support to let me go back out there. But
so they were just concerned that you were going to keep running and then fall over in a ditch or something.
Right, you know, and it is in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's not really how you want to lose a person. So... And I appreciate that, but I'd already ran 67 miles, and I really wanted to finish.
Right.
But I felt awful, but I knew that I could get back together.
What was feeling awful?
Passed out. No, actually, my stomach was great. I'm really good at eating the food.
You were cold.
I was cold, but it was just being lightheaded and passing out. After you pass out, I don't know if you do that very often. I hope you don't. Your body just takes a while to get back into a sink again, and that's what I was dealing with.
Did anybody suggest, give her a bunch of sugar, like your brain was low on sugar?
Thank goodness, they did not, because I'm hypoglycemic, and that would have been horrible.
Oh.
Horrible. Well,
while you're half awake, start shoving sugar in your mouth.
But my crew knew that, so, and that's one of the reasons why, like if you do, I have a lot of food allergies also. It's important for me to have a crew because if I can't be coherent, I need someone there that can say, hey, you know what? She has this allergy and there's someone there that will always make sure that what I'm taking in isn't going to actually kill me.
Do you think, I'm wildly guessing, so is sugar maybe related to passing out to some way? Do you have any guesses with what happened?
I really think nutrition was tricky. Because I was so cold, my body was fighting that. My body was just fighting a lot of things. I do think that I could do nutrition better, and that's why I'm going to have to do another one to figure that out.
I mean, it is interesting that it's one thing to be cold when you're stopped, but you're cold even while you're running.
Yes.
So that, I think, is not going to be the norm. I bet most people are okay when they're running. So the fact that you're cold while you're running, that says something about, like you said, something interesting about you, I guess.
Okay, we'll go with interesting.
I mean, we all have our own little challenges. And that's going to be, I think, a challenge for you because it wasn't that darn cold. I mean, granted, I can look at you, you've got no fat on you, which doesn't help. But nevertheless, that must be a challenge you're going to really have to work on.
Right, and Andrew, I mean, he was in a position where they're coming and saying, hey, can you make sure she's okay?
Yep.
So they're putting a lot of pressure on him also because we had just ran the first 67 miles together.
All right. Okay, so after there, you guys, how long do you think you were in that aid station?
I don't know.
We were there 30 minutes.
Well, that's not that horrible. That's really not that bad.
No, but at that point...
I mean, at that time, I've just sat, and before I knew it was 15 minutes, not even thinking.
We had a goal of getting in and out of the aid stations, with one exception, mile 50. We were going to spend more time there to kind of get warmed up, get some extra clothes on if it was cold, which it does
it
get
was.
Cold there.
Yeah.
We were planning on being in and out of aid stations within about 10 minutes. And then to sit there for 30 minutes, for me, to be quite honest, I hadn't passed out. And I'm sitting there going, are we even going to be able to run again? At this point, I'm starting to think about my race. I came out to run 100 milers, but I also told Jess that I would run 100 miles with her. So I'm starting to wonder, am I going to have to go on by myself at some point here in the near future, or now, are they even going to let her continue? I'm starting to get a little nervous at this
point. Are you also starting to kind of lock up? Like, if I run that long and then I'm sitting, all of a sudden I start, rigor mortis starts setting in, basically. Everything just starts stiffening, and it's that much harder. That's another reason I don't want to sit, because I will just start locking up, everything gets stiff.
Right.
And so then you get back up, you're like, oh my goodness, I can't move, I mean, we get a little out of fear.
Thankfully, I didn't really lock up. I think my hydration was good, which helps. So I would stand up periodically, a little tighter than normal, but I'm also at mile 67, so it's to be expected my legs are going to be a little tired, but for the most part, I'm still feeling pretty good. So I'm just kind of sitting there waiting, going, I'm feeling good. I know she's not. What do I do now? I'm kind of in a dilemma. At this point, we still had plenty of time. I think we were at like hour 13, maybe 14, so we still have plenty of time. But in the back of my mind, I'm starting to get a little nervous. Am I going to have to go on by myself? Am I going to have to leave her? So it was a tough situation to kind of sit there and wait for such a long period of time. It's not long in the grand scheme of things, but it felt long to me.
Yeah. Okay, so Jess, you drag your butt out of there. Do you start running, or do you guys just start walking at first?
So I still wasn't completely there. So I said, okay, I'm just going to walk. I had listened to Tracy talk the night before about you don't stop, you don't quit until you hit hour 30. You just keep going, and I'm like, all right, so I'm just gonna keep going. So we walked all the way from there to mile 76, which is like the big main hub there at Vienna. So we walked, and it was cold, and it was miserable, and it started raining. Not a lot, but it rained enough that I'm like, it is definitely raining. It is raining. It is definitely raining. And we didn't have our rain gear on us. And so we got a decent amount of wet before we hit mile 76. And Andrew was awesome and stayed and just like hung with me as we walked all the way to 76 to see where we would be at. And we passed a lot of people in that range that we knew, that we had trained with, that we had talked to, and there were a lot of tough conversations where people were really, really struggling with, are they going to keep going? Are they going to have to pull out? It was actually a very emotional stretch for that reason.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I walked from 62 to 76. I walked that whole 13 miles. And that's why I passed you guys, but I must have just been maybe a mile ahead of you the whole way to 76. I remember saying to myself, I don't want to stop when I get there, because if I stop, that may be the end. And I told I was actually walking with a couple other people, and I'm like, I'm going to get right through there in minutes, because I don't want to be tempted to quit at 76. So I think I walked that whole stretch as well. A very maybe up to at least 70, early 70s. I may have started jogging again. But all right, so you up to 76, and you're just kind of hanging with Jess.
Absolutely.
Monitoring everything. But you're still feeling generally okay?
I'm still feeling pretty good. And to say that I'm monitoring things is not really true. I kind of started walking ahead, trying to basically push the pace along a little bit. Mm-hmm. Kind of, let's at least...
You're trying to be a mental strain from you to her, and you're trying to pull her along.
Right.
Yes.
But at this point, it has gotten dark. Tunnel Hill does allow pacers once it reaches dark. So at this point, she had a pacer with her. I think it may have been her boyfriend. I don't remember for sure.
It was.
So I believe he was hanging back. I was probably a good maybe quarter mile ahead of them, just kind of periodically turning back going, you guys good? And then I would still walk.
My memory is that section... It was like there was nobody around.
No.
I felt like I went like 10 miles and saw two people. All these people are running back and forth on the same exact trail. I'm like, where is everybody?
Yep.
Not there.
Because there were times in the races you'd do a turn and you'd pass like 50 people. Now, granted, a lot of people stopped after 50 miles, so that's probably a big part of it. But still, it was like a desert.
Yep.
I
remember from that aid station to the 76, it was like, there's nobody around. Oh, yeah. And like, am I the only one left in this race or something?
You figure you've got, from the turnaround all the way back to the other side, though, you've got 20 miles between there, and everybody's going that same direction.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay, so you come in at 76, back at the start-finish. You've got about 24 to go.
Yeah.
What happened when you got to the start-finish? Did you try to get in and out fast, or did you collapse for a little while?
I took way too much time. We took my shoes off. I couldn't put new shoes back on. My feet hurt. They had to put Vaseline on the bottom of my feet, which is why my crew was so important, because they brought all kinds of crazy stuff like Vaseline.
Was it hurt because it was blistered up or beat up? Or just...
I actually had no blisters because Newtons are awesome, but they were just raw.
Ooh.
Just for being out there for so long.
Right.
And those last 2 hours, we were also getting not a lot of rain, but enough rain that we were getting wet, so that was impacting us. I was cold, I was eating soup, I had to change a lot of clothes because they were wet, and everything was moving slowly. And I was moving way slower than Andrew was. So when we decided to take me into the little depot, kind of change out of things, with the females, I came back out, and Jason, who was part of our crew, said, "Hey, Andrew went ahead." I told him he needed to go run his own race. I was actually really relieved because I was feeling very stressed out that I was holding him back, because we've been friends for a long time, and we've stuck with each other through a lot of crazy things and held out, and like we've one of us has been puking on the side of a course before, and we stay with each other. Like, that's one of the things that we do. But I was feeling stressed out because at this point in time, I'm at mile 76. I don't know that I'm going to make it, and I want him to make it. And I was grateful that we had a crew that said, "Hey, Andrew, you go ahead."
And the nice thing is, you're not out in the middle of the mountains in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
That's the nice thing. So you're going to see Andrew again and a number of other people.
Right.
So that makes it a little easier for Andrew to go on, because you've got this nice straight shot.
Because I was there for about 45 minutes. How long were you there?
So I left probably about 5 to 10 minutes prior to you leaving,
okay,
from what I found out later, because I waited, like Jess said, I waited probably for about 45 minutes. I started talking to her boyfriend, Jason, and I was kind of like looking at my watch going, at this point, we're only moving like 3 miles an hour. That's about as much time as we really have. She's not going to have any time to stop at aid stations. We're going to have to pretty much just keep walking, or we're not going to finish. And I didn't come 5.5 hours from Cincinnati not to finish this race. So after about 45 minutes, I'm like, unfortunately, you know, enough is enough. I got to go.
Yeah.
So I took off at that point, which, yeah, meant I was leaving them behind. But it was also something that I had to do to make sure that I finished my race. The other side, though, is my crew rode with her crew, meaning at this point, I'm not even 100% sure I'm going to have crew come mile 70, whatever it was. I guess it would have been 80 or 90 or so. Because if she drops out and needs to go back to the hotel, my crew is pretty much stranded because she's got to go back with them. So I'm kind of, I have to think about this too, going, what do I even do? Do I continue on? Will I even have support? But I made the decision, even if I have to carry my own gear at this point, I can. Everything I could strap onto my pack, I could finish. It certainly would be easier to have somebody to take some stuff, but it's not necessary. So at that point is when I moved on.
Yeah. Okay, last 24 miles, how'd that go? Was it a death march? Did you revive?
So here's what I'll tell you. I really, really hated all of it. By mile 80, I told everyone who I knew and didn't know that this was the worst decision I'd ever made in my entire life. I was never going to do a 100-mile race again. It's definitely, definitely a very, very stupid thing. But I had a great crew that was doing math in their head the whole time to figure out what time I had to hit each aid station, because I didn't want to get pulled. Because the worst thing that could have happened to me was to walk into an aid station and be told, well, we need your number, you're done. And I was really, really afraid that in 97 that was going to happen. So I'm trying to do math in my head, but I'm pretty incoherent. By mile 95, I thought there was a little red wagon following me. I really, I was seeing like highway signs on the trees, which clearly were not there to everyone else, but I was like, oh, it says Vienna's only 13 miles away. And my crew's like, no, Jess, that doesn't say that. That's not actually there. I'm like, no, that sign right there. They're like, no, that's not really a thing. I kept turning around thinking red wagon was following me. I was a little crazy at the end, but I kept trying to do the math, and I couldn't do the math because I wasn't coherent. And when I came through the tunnel that heading out the last time, there was another group coming back through, and they said, hey, you're on track, you're good, you're over an hour ahead of the cutoff, you're going to be fine. And I actually, like, tears just started, like, rolling down my cheeks, because I couldn't do the math. I'm like, really? Is that true? Is that real? So I came into that depot there, and I was just so ecstatic that I wasn't going to get pulled. It's also the time that I found out I loved grapes. I had no idea I loved grapes until right then. So for the rest of the time, my crew was just like throwing grapes at me to try to keep stuff in. Because I was at the point where I didn't want to eat anymore. Because it gets hard to eat for that many hours straight. Like, I thought I loved eating, because I do. But eating for 30 hours is really, really hard. And so it was tough. And when I came back around the last time, I kept switching off crew members. I had three with me because we sent Sarah to stay with Andrew. So he had Sarah for the last 8 miles. I didn't. So I had crew switching out with me because I was kind of a hot mess. And they kept saying, okay, I'm going to need you to pick up 30 seconds. We need to pick up at least 30 seconds the next 3 miles. And they're talking me through this, and I kept wanting to stop, and they're like, nope, you can't stop here. Okay, you can stop here for 90 seconds to stretch your legs. That's it, 90 seconds.
Are you walking all of this?
I am. I walked the last 24 completely until I got to the very end. I was like, okay, I'm jogging this in, which was hilarious. I didn't even know if I could, but I was able to. But it was all walking because I had listened to what Tracy said, and she's like, if you can't run, you just keep moving, and I did.
Yeah.
But it was tough.
So where did you see Andrew on that last 24 miles?
We saw each other right around the tunnel.
I was going to say, maybe you were around the tunnel coming back and she'd
give
going
or take,
in.
Yeah,
we saw each other right around the tunnel. And I was happy to see how far ahead he was of me and how he was looking good. And I knew he was going to hit. I still didn't know if I was going to, but I knew he was. And so I was happy about that.
I feel like I saw you somewhere.
It would have been
tunnelish
around,
area.
Yeah, it would have been probably around the turnaround, I think.
Yeah, I was only a little bit ahead of you, I think. So.
Yep.
All right, so you make it in. Andrew, how'd your last 24 go? Were you holding steady, or did you start falling apart at all?
Well, so after I left at 76, I'm kind of looking at my watch going, I don't want to be fighting cutoffs, and I know I'm going to probably end up walking a little bit, but I still had energy. I'm actually still feeling pretty good at this point. So I actually took off running.
He's going to tell you something silly. Listen to what he did after mile 76.
And I was running at a pretty good clip. For those who don't know Tunnel Hill has a little bit of an elevation right after the start-finish line. So at this point, after mile 76, you climb just a little bit. It's not much elevation, but it feels like a hill. Yeah. It's about 6 miles long.
It's absolutely pathetic that we feel it, but you do when you're in that much pain.
Yes.
So every little itch you go up, you feel it.
I agree with that.
So I end up going, okay, I know it's about a mile, maybe two, before this, quote, hill starts to show up. I took off at about a 10-minute mile at mile 76 of the race. So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm just barreling along as quick as I can go. I want to say 10 minute, maybe 10:30s. Hit the little bit of the hill, start power hiking. I'm still power hiking probably 12 minute miles. I mean, I'm cruising up this hill because I don't want to fight cutoffs. I know at some point I'm going to be tired. I know I'm going to end up walking at some point. Just kind of at this point, I'm hanging on as long as I can, really. Get up to the aid station, found out my crew did make it there, and I don't see Jess in the car. So now I know there's a good chance that she's out on the course. I wasn't able to confirm just because I'm still trying to keep moving. So I get out past the aid station. There's about a 2.5 mile run until you get to the turnaround and start coming back towards the start finish. When I made that turnaround, that's when things got a little tough. At that point, you know, I've been up for about 26 hours, I think, at that point. I'm exhausted. I've been having some caffeine through the night. I was able to make it. Even though the sun's about to come up, I am spent. So I start walking, and I knew that was going to happen. And then I ended up walking pretty much the whole rest of the way, but I still had plenty of time. So I knew I was going to finish. I just needed to keep moving forward, and that was pretty much the goal in what I was able to get to through that last 24-ish miles.
So you guys made it. That's what counts.
Yeah. We did.
Absolutely.
We did make it. And at the end, those last... the last 7 miles, like after you get through the tunnel again, you get to know a bunch of the people that are around you, right? And for me, because I was at the tail end of this, these are all the other people. It was a lot of first-time 100-milers, just like myself, who I knew their names now, and I knew things about them, and I knew their story. And that's one of my favorite things about 100-mile races, is you get to learn the stories about all these people. And I was cheering for all of them, maybe even more than I was cheering for myself. So, because I had my crew with me to keep me from wandering off, I would say, turn around, is Chelsea still back there? Like, I knew the names of these girls, and I wanted to know that you could see all of them, because I knew that I was near the cutoff, and if we could see them, they were going to make it too. And when I crossed the finish line, all I wanted to do was be able to be turned around, because I wasn't moving again, so that I could see all these other people that I had spent the last almost 30 hours of my life with, knowing they were going to cross it too. Like, that was so important to me. And when, and because I was at the end, because I crossed 16 minutes before the finish line.
Holy moly.
So I had 16 minutes to spare.
29:44-ish?
Yep.
Wow.
So I crossed it 29:43 and change. And so I was watching these people cross, and I was cheering each one of them because I was so excited to see that they made it. And then they started taking everything down. And I started thinking about the people who I knew who were still out there. And that was very painful. Like, I didn't expect to have that as part of, like, this experience. But it was very hard to, like, when you start realizing who those people were, it was tough. But being at the finish line with all those last people, like, I think that was the best part.
That's very interesting. Andrew, what was your final time?
I finished in just under 28 hours. So you figure we were at 76, at mile 76 at the exact same time. I left maybe 5 minutes before her, and I finished give or take 2 hours before she finished. It's just an interesting thought when you kind of think about it. You know, you're planning on sticking it together. So, yeah, I mean, I was really trying to push because I did not want to fight cutoffs. I've been there before, and it sucks.
It's tough. It is. It was a very emotional thing because every time I got close to another aid station, that's all I could think about was, what is my time? Am I hitting it at the right time? And my watch was dead. I had no idea what time of the day it was. And so every time coming in, there was so much apprehension. Am I going to make it? Are they going to pull me? I just didn't even know. But I had a crew that spent all their time doing math in their head to make sure that that happened. And if I did not have them, I wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, I can't do math either. I don't even make an attempt. I just keep moving, and I figure if I'm near cutoff, someone's going to tell me when I don't make it.
I have a job in finance, and I can't do it.
Well, I was a math major in college. I can't do it either. So.
Yeah, once you're awake for so many hours, that all goes out the door.
Yeah, it's some type of thing. So when you were all done, was there any particular body parts that were in the most pain, or was just everything in pain?
I was too tired. The only thing that I could recognize when I crossed the finish line, that I was so tired I didn't want to move again. Everything was sore, but I was actually surprised at that I was sore and I was tired, but there wasn't anything that felt like it was going to fall off.
That's actually good.
And that's what... Because remember, at mile 80, I said, never do this again. It was the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life. But when I woke up the next morning and I was able to get up and take a shower and walk down the stairs, I was like, huh, my training was really solid. And I was sore for a couple of days, and I walked around slowly, but I really didn't have... I expected to feel injuries, and I didn't. And so now I'm going to have to do another one.
Were you still frozen those last 24 miles as well? Did that ever go away?
Yes. I never took my gloves off. I never took my hat off. There's a really fascinating photo of me that was taken exactly 25 minutes after I finished or crossed the finish line. And I'm in the hotel room, and they got me upstairs, and I'm in the bed still with my hat, my gloves, my jacket, everything, under a blanket, asleep. I was just so cold, and I just couldn't warm up.
After a race, I will begin violent shivering quite often. And I can be perfectly fine while running, and I stop, and basically every minute, my body must just drop a degree, and in 10, 15 minutes, I'm literally just shivering.
Yeah.
Even if it's not that bad out. So there's, I don't know. Now, it doesn't happen while I'm running, but after I'm running, I'm just a mess. So what about when you finish? Is there any particular body parts that just... Like, for me, it's my feet. My feet are unbelievable amounts of pain. Oh, maybe my hip flexors as well, so I get these kind of particular spots. Do you have any spots, or is it kind of just everything?
Yeah, for me, it was the quads. I don't know if it was the power hiking, if it was trying to run 10-minute miles at mile 76. But at the end of the race, my quads were hurting. I just remember probably the next week, it was a real struggle. Not that I recommend anybody go running a lot of miles a week after a 100, but I did try to do a little bit of running, and I just remember that whole week my quads were on fire, and I was just trying to stretch them out because at some point during that race, I either stretched them or hurt them in some way. It was a little bit painful, but they made it through. That's what matters.
So, Jess, this was your first 100, right?
This is my first
You've done some 50s?
Two 50s.
And they were both Tunnel Hill?
They were both Tunnel Hill.
Okay, so you've done some 100s, right, Andrew?
This was my second.
What was the other one?
Pistol, down in Tennessee.
Okay, what have you done? What 50s have you done? Have you done a number of them?
I've done a fair amount. I honestly can't recall a lot.
I guess one thing I'm getting at is... There was actually a challenge to me in the fact the race was so flat.
Yep.
Yes.
It was
absolutely
very repetitive. You didn't get a chance to stretch your calves or your quads or your knees or your glutes in a different way ever.
Yeah.
It was 30 hours of the exact same movement. And I think that creates its own issues.
Yeah, I would agree. And Jess and I spent a lot of time. I know I spent a ton of time training on the Little Miami Bike Trail here where I live. I'm about a mile and a half from a bike trail that mirrors the race course of Tunnel Hill pretty closely. It's about a 2% grade all the way up for about 100 miles that I could run or walk. And so Tunnel Hill is basically a 2%, I think maybe 3% grade at most. The only difference is it's crushed limestone in Tunnel Hill. The Little Miami Bike Trail is paved.
Yeah.
But for all intent and purpose, crushed limestone feels like a paved bike path. So I spent a ton of time training on that. I think that helped, but still 100 miles is a lot more than I trained on that bike path.
Yeah, I agree. That was smart for you to do that. I should have done more just road running, just regular running on flats.
Yep.
Yes.
I think it would have paid off. Camille Herron, what did you think when she went flying by? I think we all saw her probably three times.
So the first time we saw her, we thought she was running the 50 because she was crushing it. We're like, wow, she's looking really good for the 50. And then when we realized she was running the 100, we're like, what?
When I saw her, she was in second. I just got past. So I'd only done 26 miles, basically, and I got past that a little bit. And she came running by, just about ready to complete 50, because she's basically going double my speed. And she was in second place. There was only one guy ahead of her.
Yeah.
I mean, she was in second place had she been running the 50 mile.
Right.
And yet she's going to go yet another 50.
And her hair looked good the whole time. Oh, I did.
But didn't she appear to be sprinting a 5K?
It was, and she just... The whole time, every time we saw her, and then after that, when we realized, we were excited to see her that last time, to see how she looked, and she looked just the way she did the first time when we saw her. And that was very exciting because we realized that she was going to set an amazing record. And it's just exciting to be on the course at the same time as someone setting a record like that.
Oh,
it was just exciting.
It was amazing because I think probably all of us had just gotten past 76 miles, basically. So we're got a whole 24 to go when she's basically almost coming into the finish.
Yeah.
Yep.
And is that even right?
I don't know.
No, it was before that.
I'm sorry. We had just, us three would have just finished 50 miles.
The 50 miles.
That's what I mean. We had just gotten through the start finish. We had just finished 50, all three of us probably. Just getting out of there, you know, a mile, two, three, 4 miles when she's coming back to finish. And I remember it was pitch dark.
It's amazing.
And I was really trying to keep my eye out for her the whole time because we don't really know where she is. And I just remember, like, really trying to find her. And then, you know, finally I see her go flying by. And it was just a big rock and roll Camille, you know. And it's like,
it was incredible.
I knew something amazing.
It was very exciting to be a part of
it. It really was. It's like we were part of this history.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's a great course for that.
Yeah. That was pretty amazing. So a couple other questions. We're about done. Are you two both putting your name in the Western States after this?
Yes, we are.
Well, I'm glad she spoke for me, but yes, I plan to as well.
I mean, granted, see, now, even though it's 2017 now, that's for 2019 Western States.
Correct. Yeah, that was one of the things. We've talked about it for the last year.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andrew.
No.
We've talked about it for the last year.
Do you hope, and there'd be nothing wrong with thinking this way, because I have a thought this way too, is there a part of you that kind of hopes you don't get selected right away so you can get more experience? Or do you like, I want to go as soon as I can go?
Oh, no. I let the world figure that out for me. Whatever happens, just happens.
Because some people, I have that thought to some extent. Like,
if it happens, you go.
Yeah. Andrew, you all ready to go?
Well, I'm not now, but I will be in a few months because whether I'm ready or not at the moment, I plan to do some pretty, some people would call stupid things in 2018 that I can't imagine won't get me ready for Western States. So
we are going to get to that. Okay, so Jess, do you have any races you already signed up for 2018? Or thinking, pretty sure you're going to sign up for?
Yeah, so I've got
anything.
I've got three marathons for the spring so far.
Which ones?
I've got Xenia. I've got the Derby, which Andrew and
Kentucky
I actually.
Derby?
Yep.
I've done that.
He and I actually, we pace for that, which is a lot of fun.
Nice.
And then the 20th anniversary of the Flying Pig.
I have done the Flying Pig.
They have bacon. You have.
I'm doing a race the next weekend, so I don't want to do the marathon. I could do the half maybe, but yeah, that'll be
but if
that'll
you do
be
the
fun.
Full at mile 16. There's bacon.
Bacon. Very nice. Hmm. Somehow that almost seems wrong. Should the Flying Pig really have bacon?
I will also tell you, I already have my name on a waiting list for the motel in Vienna, Illinois, so that I can go and do the 50 miler there again next year. So we've already, Andrew and I, have talked about it, and that's going to be a thing as well.
There you go.
But I'm not going to speak for him because his schedule is amazing.
Yeah, so Andrew, you are going to attempt the Midwest Grand Slam. Is that correct?
The Super Slam.
The Super Slam. So
yep.
What races are those?
So it starts with Kettle Moraine.
That's early June, right?
Early June, June 2nd
next
year.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. 2 weeks after that is Mohican 100,
Ohio?
Which is Northern Ohio.
And crazy.
The very next month in July is Burning River 100, also in Northern Ohio.
Right.
Then you have Hallucination 100.
Right. I just completed that.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've heard good things
about it, but I haven't done it yet. It's a great race.
But that's up in Michigan.
Right.
And then you've got the Indiana Trail 100.
Which is now moved to October.
Correct. They moved that from April to October, from my understanding, due to weather and potential for cancellation.
I did that, and it was just a ridiculous mud fest.
Yeah.
And that happened like 4 years in a row, and they said the heck with it.
Yeah.
The gods just did not want them to have it in April. So that's ridiculous right there. So then she's going to make you do Tunnel Hill after that. Which will seem like a piece of cake, assuming that your legs actually still
function. We'll see about Tunnel Hill. Right now, I'm only committed to helping crew. That said, I may be talked into Tunnel Hill. It might kind of depend on Western States, because we were just talking about Western States. With only one ticket in Western States, I'll probably have like a 1.5% chance of getting in. I think this year it was 1.9.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to go ahead and try to get into Western States, I'm probably going to have to run a race next year to get in. Tunnel Hill is pretty much the first opportunity you have to get into Western States. So I might go back, do the 100, try to get another ticket into Western States for 20. I guess it would be 2020 at that point. And then if everything goes right, I'll get another ticket. If it doesn't, I still have an entire year to get my gold, or get my ticket, not a golden ticket. Sorry, I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah.
Get my regular ticket.
Dream on, buddy.
Into Western States. I'm not that fast, unfortunately. But yeah, I would like to do Western States. So if I can get a ticket early, that would be great. Then I can kind of, you know, choose what I want to do in 2019. Right. If I don't, then I at least know I have to complete 100 that has a Western States qualifier on
it. It's too bad you don't get a ticket, you know, per race.
I wish.
You get like five of them.
I wish, yeah. And unfortunately, that Slam, they all count for the 2019 race, so I already have my 2019 ticket. I can't get any more at this
Completely
point.
Wasting your time.
Well, I have other goals too, so it'll help me with those.
Just kidding. All right, I think that's about it. Do you guys have any favorite races that you think people should do? Jess, you have any? Any races at all? Marathons?
Well, okay, so I'm a Cincinnati girl, so I love the Flying Pig.
The Flying Pig is fantastic.
20th anniversary is coming up this year, and I love it. And I can't stress enough that there is actually bacon on the course at mile 16. There is a church group that fries up 150 pounds of bacon and hands it out to the runners.
That's a lot of Flying Pigs.
It really is. And here's the thing. It's like brunch and running all put together in one.
And people should know, it is a very difficult marathon elevation-wise. Very hilly.
Yes. And it's my training roads. Like, this is where I train. So I love this race. I love this marathon, and I do it every year.
Andrew, what do you have? Anything that people should do from your experience? Like, beautiful views or just great organization, anything?
I would have to say there's a few. So the race director for Tunnel Hill, Steve Durbin, puts on some phenomenal races. There's Tunnel Hill, so if you're looking to do like a 50 or 100 miler, fantastic place to do your first or try to get a record. But he does a couple other races, Run Under the Stars, Ruts as they're known, down in like Paducah. I think there's one in Oak Ridge. There's one or two others. Those are timed races. Those are phenomenal
those
events.
Are 12-hour? And you run right, or are they 24?
I want to say they're 10, actually. Okay. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Do you run all night long? Is that what they do?
Yep, they run over the night, hence the Run Under the Stars portion.
Ruts.
But they're a phenomenal race. And then I love the Pistol Ultra. I've done that every year since I did it the first time with my 100-miler.
And that's down in Chattanooga or Nashville?
It's in Alcoa, Tennessee.
Alcoa,
it's a suburb of, it's basically where the airport of Knoxville is.
Okay.
So that's a phenomenal race. The race director for that race does a great job. And then you've got, I would be remiss if I didn't say the Kentucky Derby Marathon, but I'll note that I'm an ambassador for that race. I really enjoy that race.
I did that a long time ago, probably 10 years ago. Do they run near or on the track or something?
Yep. You go right
into
through
it.
It's so much fun. I Snapchatted that whole thing last year.
Yeah, I need to do that again because I remember. Yep. And that also has some little sneaky hills at the end, if I recall.
From 24 to 26, there's rollers, but then you have Iroquois Park from 13 to 15, and that's some fun hills.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Oh,
I recall
some
hills.
Yeah.
Because I was going for a Boston qualifier and the hills.
Those hills might tell you otherwise.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you've got your hometown race, the Flying Pig as well, which this year is the week after the Kentucky Derby. So I'll be there as well.
I'll be doing both.
I'm doing both, and I'm doing Strolling Gym the day before the Pig this year too to train for the Super Slam. We'll hope that goes well.
Andrew, let's hope that you stay healthy through all this.
That's the goal.
That's number one. Jess, keep up the good work.
Thanks.
100 number one is done.
Yep.
More to come.
More to come.
All right. I think we're done.
Thank you.
Thank you guys very much.
Appreciate it.
All right. Okay. That was fun. Thanks a lot to Jess and Andrew for that. Very interesting interview. And I think kind of fun to hear their point of view and their challenges going through the race. A few notes on that. Shoes, I wore the ATR, the Challenger ATR3, the Hoka Challenger ATR3. That's what I wore. These are cushiony. The this version is wider than the previous version. So as many know, Hoka shoes were just too narrow for too many people, but they're starting to widen them. So the Hoka Challenger ATR3 are wide enough that I can wear them. They don't have a whole lot of a grip on the bottom or anything like that. You can wear them on the road if you really want to. They're perfect for crush gravel. Absolutely perfect. So that's what I wore during the race, the whole race. Justin Andrew, interestingly, wear Newton shoes. You don't hear this a whole lot. So Andrew wore the Newton Gravity and the Newton Distance, and Jess wore the Newton Gravity shoes. I don't know anything about them, but you might want to check those out because I think that's a little bit unique to wear. I subsequently did see something by another local Cincinnati runner, Harvey Lewis. Many of you may know about him. He's a very famous elite runner. And I think he wears Newtons sometimes as well. So at least three people in the Cincinnati area are wearing Newton shoes, it seems like. It's not one you tend to hear about a whole lot. So people might want to check those out. What else? That's something about what Jess was eating. Oh, we talked about what Jess ate during the race with her challenges. And she did mention grapes. She said she ended up eating lots of grapes and also peanut butter graham cracker sandwiches. So I guess those two things really got her through the race. And finally, yes, Camille Herron did set a 100-mile world record. Evidently, it's a trail and a road world record, both 12 hours and 42 minutes. And those of us who witnessed it can only shake our heads pretty much in disbelief at just seeing someone do that. I mean, it's like we went and witnessed a no-hitter or something, you know. It's not quite the same as saying we went to a Super Bowl, because then you know you're going to something amazing. It's more like going to a regular event and something amazing happens. She entered very shortly before the race, so I'm guessing some people didn't even know she was going to be there, or maybe didn't know what was going on until later. I happen to know she was going to be there and that she was going to try for the 100-mile world record. But just watching her fly was unbelievable. So again, three times I saw her, and it wasn't at, all three times she was coming at me when I saw her. And that last time was amazing. I mean, she was just flying, and she's already run 95 miles. And just flying, cruising, really, really something to see. I'll always be able to say, hey, I was there when Camille Herron did that. It feels like that, you know. It's like we witnessed this historical event, really quite something. And she's been on about a million podcasts, so I'm sure if you just type in podcast Camille Herron, she's been interviewed about 20 times already. Because since then, she went ahead and did a American record track on the track, I think like 12 hour. Then she went and won Bandera 100K, which means she's in Western States. She got a golden ticket. That was just like a weekend ago. So she's on quite a roll, for sure. Also, I discovered one last thing. I discovered the little cheat sheet that I carried with me during the race. I'm holding it up to the camera, and I'll try to post a picture. It's not that interesting in a way, but it lists all the aid stations and what mileage they're at, and little notes to myself. It's amazing how little I really put down. I've got notes about, for instance, at the third aid station, glasses. In other words, pick up my sunglasses. At that same aid station, it says drop hat, drop jacket, drop gloves. So get rid of those things. It says that, I guess where I'm going to be at what time. So it says that I should be back to the start-finish at 1:30 in the afternoon was my guess, and it says Petzl, to pick up my Petzl headlamp. I have two headlamps, a Petzl and a Black Diamond. I also have these knuckle lights. You wear them on your hands. But little notes like that, I see at 8, it says 8 p.m. I should be back at the start-finish at done with 50 miles was my guess. I was actually probably there about 7. And it says brush, as in brush my teeth. So I always have those little disposable toothbrushes. They're about 2 inches long. They're preloaded with toothpaste. I think they're called Wisp. I put a couple of those in my drop bags, and then I like to brush my teeth. Otherwise, they get all gross. So I usually brush my teeth sometime in the evening and then again in the morning. So it's interesting because at mile 85, I wrote at the Tunnel Hill aid station, the last time I see that, it says rain gear. I guess somehow I knew it was going to rain toward the end of the race, and I was actually right. It did rain just a tiny, tiny bit. I'm not sure how I knew that, but I guess I did. So those are my little notes to myself. You notice there's nothing about food because usually I just put everything on my drop bags. All my drop bags kind of have everything, and I just grab what I need. In fact, regarding the aid stations, again, I don't recall a whole lot. Oh, I do know that they carry Sword, S-W-O-R-D, Sword hydration drink. A Sword is popular in Kentucky, Illinois. The people who made it, I think, came out of Kentucky, and Durban Race Management races will have it, and some other races in the area will carry Sword, and it's fine. It works fine for me. I'm really easy. I don't really care what they have. I think they might have like a ginger ale that I tend to like. I'm not even sure if they had that at the race. I just like, hey, put whatever you got. Put it in my bottles. I don't care what it is. And they had all the other goodies you want. I think they had gels. But again, I always bring all the gels I need. But if they have them, then I'll grab some too. And other than that, they had, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and all the other snacks and stuff that you need as well. As far as what I wore, otherwise I had my Ultimate Direction Timothy Olsen vest with two bottles up front. And that was that. It carried me through the race. I mean, every 5 miles, you had an aid station. So I didn't even have to fill the bottles up, really. I could fill them halfway up, and I'd be fine. And I think that just about covers everything that I can think of. I did think that Andrew, talking about the Midwest Super Slam, he should add Tunnel Hill to his schedule next year, and then it could be the Super Duper Slam, the Midwest Super Duper Slam. Everyone else would be doing 5 races, 100 miles, to do the Midwest Super Slam. He should just add another one, 6, it could be the Super Duper. That's what I say. Hello, everyone. I'm butting in because I cannot help but fix the technical error I made regarding when I saw Camille Herron. So what I was saying was not correct as far as the last time I saw her. So I sat down and calculated and plotted out the 3 times that I saw Camille Herron, and all 3 of these times, she would have been coming at me as I saw her. So the first time would be towards the beginning of the race when we all took off to the south. She would have made the turnaround before I got there, and probably I was around mile 10 and she was about mile 16, very roughly. The second time is when I would have passed the start-finish and went a little bit by and been around mile 29. By then, she had run the full length of the whole course and had did the north turnaround and was coming back to finish 50 miles and was probably about mile 47. So I'm at 29, just having went by the start-finish. She's at 47, only 3 miles from finishing 50 miles. And as you can see at this point, she's about double me, because as the pace goes on, her pace relative to mine is getting faster and faster, because she's holding her pace and I'm getting slower and slower. The third time, I would have still been short of 50 miles. I ran about another, here's the amazing thing, from the second time I saw her to the third time I saw her, I ran 15 miles, I'm guessing, from about mile 29 to 44. So I made the turn on the north turnaround, and I was coming back. I was 6 miles, maybe, shy of 50 miles. During that time, she ran 35 miles, I'm guessing, all the way to the south, did that turnaround, went all the way back through the start-finish, about mile 76 for her, and would have been at about mile 82. So I was at 44, and she was probably at 82. Again, from the second to third time I saw her, I ran only about 15 miles. She ran about 35, over double my pace, because again, I'm going slower and slower and slower. So when I saw her the last time, she had about 18 miles to go because she still had to get to the north turnaround and come back. I had about 6 miles to go to finish 50 miles. And I can remember now the third time I saw her, she did not have a headlamp. And now I recall thinking, wow, she maybe should have one because it was getting dark. And by my calculation, it was probably about 5:30 in the evening. And at that time, it was getting, I had my headlamp on, I'm pretty sure. And I remember her running by with no headlamp. And I'm thinking, whoa, it was right on that edge where without a headlamp, you're struggling to see. I mean, you could, but just barely. But I'm assuming when she got to the next aid station, which was a drop bag aid station at Tunnel Hill, I think, or maybe even the one before that, she probably did pick up a headlamp there. So anyway, those are the three times I saw her. I was at mile 10, 29, and 44. She was at 16, 47, and 84. So there you go. I was done seeing her, of course. But when I was at mile 50, she was behind me, probably about 10 miles or so to go behind me, running in the same direction as me. But I was never going to see her again because then I took off to the south and she was coming behind me at about another 10 miles to go just to get to the finish. And that's where my wife saw her finish, which was very cool. By the way, I should mention my wife got a video of it, and it was really, really super exciting for her to see that finish. So she was there to witness that history happen. So anyway, just wanted to clarify that. Hey, one other thing I wanted to clarify was this. I didn't say anything about the scenery of the course, and you might think it was incredibly dull because it was just two out and backs. And it's true, the south out and back did not have a lot in the way of views because the trees and such were pretty much on top of you. So on one side was like a forest or whatever it was just trees, and the other side was a road, not right next to you, but a little ways off, I can't remember, 50 feet, it seemed like there was a road. So there wasn't a whole lot to see on the south side. On the north side, though, there were some really beautiful views. It opened up every now and then, you crossed a couple of rivers, or at least one river, I remember, with a bridge. It seemed to me there was two or three bridges. Nice rivers, nice rock formations. And some really nice views. And I do have some pictures, I believe, so I'll put those up on the website. But I'm one that can really run in anything. I don't have to have beautiful views. I love them. I love them. I love them. And when I see them, I stop and take way too many pictures. But I can run without having to, I don't have to have that. But they were there on the north side. Were some really lovely views. And of course, again, you go through the tunnel, which itself is really neat when you come out of it. On one side, there's these big rocks on both sides, cliffs, kind of rock cliffs on both sides. Really cool to look at. So there was some eye candy, especially on the north side, to look at. And, even on the south side, it's not like it was ugly. You weren't looking at old dilapidated factories or something. It was just you're running in the woods. It was still very, very peaceful, very nice. So, yes, there was some good scenery. You're not in the mountains or anything like that, but there were some nice things for you to look at. Anyway, remember again, this show will be on YouTube eventually, so tell others if they want to watch it on there, they can. Otherwise, that is all for today. You can find out more about me at runsmith.net. Email, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. My email is chemsmith1@gmail.com. Like the beginning of the word chemistry, C-H-E-M, Smith1, the number one, chemsmith1@gmail.com. Please go ahead and send me an email with any feedback or to introduce yourself, anything you like. What's on your racing schedule? What do you have coming up? You can even send in an MP3 file of 5 minutes or less, and I'll play it right on the show. Might be kind of fun. So, by the way, racing schedule, I think I am doing the Buzzard Day 50K in Ohio in March, the Hawkeye 50K in Iowa in April, and the UROC 100K in May in Virginia. I think it's in Virginia. Assuming I can get my training going to get to UROC, we'll see how that goes. But if you're doing any of those races, and somehow you can see who I am, please come up and say hi. Maybe I'll interview you. You never know if it's at the end of the race or something. But anyway, come up and say hi. But do feel free to send me an email. Also, check out my coaching services. Remember, I have a special going on in January. Check that out on the website. And if you go to iTunes, please go to iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And a review. That would I would really appreciate that. And thanks one more time to Health IQ for their sponsorship. Please visit them at healthiq.com/endurance for savings on life insurance. Don't forget that. And that's it. This is Runsmith Enterprises presents Topics in Endurance Sports. Signing out. Have a fun workout.